This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Infidel greetings to all you godless heathens and iconoclasts, and welcome to Free Thought Radio, to radio as secular as our Constitution. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This show is the weekend of April the 10th, 2010.
And Free Thought Radio is devoted to the views of the undevout.
And we offer irreverent, undevout, undevoted views, news, music, and interviews.
And a warm hello also to listeners in Monterey, Anchorage, Atlanta, Grand Rapids, and of course, podcasters the world round.
Free Thought Radio is a weekly, hourly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of atheists and agnostics, and we want to educate the world about what we non-believers, we non-theists, actually think, and to work to keep religion and government separate. Ann Gaylor, who's the president emerita of the Freedom From Religion Foundation and one of the three founders, including you, Annie Laurie.
Way back in 1976 when I was a college student.
And she and Paul are partially retired. She still does a little bit of work for the foundation. But she suggested that I tell a joke this week for our senior citizen listeners, and she told us this joke. There was an older retired couple in the living room watching TV or something, and she looked up and said to the husband, could you get us some ice cream? It would be nice to have some ice cream with some strawberry sauce on top. And he said, oh, sure, I can do that. And he's walking into the kitchen, and she says, now, don't forget, I want ice cream, okay? And he's going, I won't forget. And don't forget the strawberry sauce on the top. I won't forget. So a couple of minutes, he comes back into the living room.
After a long time.
He's in there working. Oh, okay.
He's in there a long time.
All right. Then he comes back into the living room with a plate of bacon and eggs. And the wife looks up and said, you forgot the toast.
All right. Coming up, we'll be speaking with Dan Dennett, Tufts University philosopher and author of the bestseller Breaking the Spell.
Professor Daniel C. Dennett will return as a guest to Free Thought Radio to talk about a fascinating paper that he has just co-written. It's called Preachers Who Are Not Believers.
And that's of special interest to you, Dan, since you used to be an ordained minister, and you do talk about your experiences in your two books. Losing Faith and Faith, From Preacher to Atheist, came out first, and then your newest book is Godless. But for listeners who haven't read Dan's books, I wonder if you can tell us briefly, you know, what it was like to go through this period where you were preaching and you were not believing. What's your story?
Well, I preached for 19 years. I started when I was 15, so I was about 34. I was still preaching, but by that time, I had lost my faith. And in the summer of 1983...
Now, why had you lost your faith? I thought you could mention that.
Well, it was study. It was reading. It was a gradual 4 or 5 year process of swinging across this theological or philosophical continuum, starting as a fundamentalist, conservative, literalist, and a couple years later more of a moderate believer, and a couple years later more of a liberal, and then finally I popped all the way out and became a brand new baby atheist. That was about the summer of 83, and it was for intellectual reasons. It was for studying and learning that Christianity is not true and the arguments for God are false and so on. But I didn't just stop preaching. And we're going to talk with Daniel Dennett about this later because he's interviewed some of these people who are actually still in the pulpit. I went through about 5 months, the end of that year up until December, when I still had engagements on the calendar, and I didn't know like how to stop
on
a dime.
You weren't a minister of a church like some of them. You were a roving musical evangelist. Right?
Well, I had been an associate pastor of some churches, but at that time
you were mostly just accepting.
At that time, since I was a Christian songwriter, I was doing more like guest appearances and preaching, preaching in musical things. And I did some preaching from the pulpit. But between that summer and December, I actually was still accepting invitations to preach, and I shouldn't have done that. I was a total hypocrite.
Or some of them were obligations you already had.
Well, yeah, I had this calendar, and I didn't make a lot of money, but I mean, it was some income, and it was just awkward. I should have stopped on right then, but it took me a few more months. But it's interesting because when I went through that period of not believing, nothing really changed outwardly, and you know, I was saying the same things, and the audiences were reacting the same way. And after one of my sermons, this woman came up to me and she said, "Reverend Barker, I want you to know that I really felt the Spirit of God on your ministry tonight." And I'm thinking, "You did?" And it was interesting to go through that because it kind of showed me this huge drama that churchgoers are playing. No minister, no preacher, no priest would have any success if it weren't for the participation of those people out in the pews. And so there's sort of an expectation. You're up there, we're out here, amen, praise God, preach, you know, all these things. And I realized that people are coming to hear what they want to hear, and they're coming for their own reasons. And in my book, I tell about the very last time, I'm not going to tell it today, but the very last time I preached when I just couldn't do it anymore. And I went home and wrote my letter to everybody explaining that I was no longer a believer.
Which was quite a moment because your whole life was intertwined with your evangelical ministry and your family. And yeah. So it took a lot of courage too, though.
Well, what we're going to talk about with Daniel Dennett later is for most of these people, including me, the big problem is a practical one. What do you do with your life after you've had all these years of skills in one kind of a career? How do you make a living? What do you do? How do you move on? How do you tell your family?
So you've been the confidant, really. You've been receiving letters and calls and emails over the years from ministers who were in your position.
So you did
pass on a few possible contacts for the study that Professor Dennett did of ministers who are not believers anymore.
Yeah, right? In fact, we'll talk about a couple of them. And I'm still in touch with them because they want some help. They want some guidance about what to do with their lives.
So we'll talk more about this phenomenon with Daniel Dennett on the second half of Free Thought Radio. And now I'd like to turn to a subject of great importance to me and to the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is the changing composition of the Supreme Court. And of course, the foundation does so much litigation, and we've had a case before the Supreme Court, and we currently have a record 9 lawsuits going, any one of which might wend its way up to the Supreme Court.
Which may or may not be good news. Justice John Paul Stevens, you probably have heard, is giving broad hints that he plans to retire, maybe this year. He's the oldest member of the court, and because of the changing composition, or maybe decomposition of the court, where he used to be considered a moderate, he's now one of the most progressive members of the Supreme Court and a stalwart when it comes to the separation between state and church.
The octogenarians and nonagenarians in our population are the most firm and committed people on separation of church and state because they grew up with a pledge that didn't have God in it. They grew up when civics lessons were revered. And so we're losing an octogenarian.
And he was on our side in our lawsuit.
Yes, we had Justice Stevens vote in FFRF's lawsuit before the Supreme Court. He voted with us in that 5-4 case in which we were suing President Bush over the faith-based office. It was 5-4 against us.
Okay, now this is kind of a touchy issue. The fact that 6 out of the current 9 justices on the Supreme Court are Roman Catholic. And if Stevens retires, he's the last of the nominally Protestant justices. Ginsburg and Breyer are Jewish. Sonia Sotomayor, who just replaced Souter, became the 6th Catholic.
And I have to say that did show a lack of attention to detail by the Obama administration. If you want diversity, you can't just look at the sex or ethnic background. Do you really want the vast majority of the Supreme Court to worship at the same church or even simply to have come out of the same religious tradition? Obviously, that ain't diversity.
Here's a quick recapitulation of this issue by Nina Totenberg last week on National Public Radio.
Let's face it, this is a radioactive subject.
Religion is the third rail of Supreme Court politics.
Jeffrey Schessel is the author of the critically acclaimed new book, Supreme Power.
It's not something that is talked about in polite company, although I think privately a lot of people remark about the surprising fact that there are, in fact, this many Catholics on the Supreme Court.
In all of American history, there have been just 12 Catholics on the court, and 6 of them are there now. Only 7 Jews have ever served on the court, and 2 of them are there now. Depending on the Stevens replacement, there may be no Protestants left on the court at all in a majority Protestant nation where for decades and generations all the justices were Protestant.
And Nina Totenberg went on to point out that the first Catholic to serve on the Supreme Court was Chief Justice Roger Taney, whose name and reputation is forever linked to the fact that he authored the Dred Scott decision upholding slavery. And she pointed out it would be 30 more years before another Catholic was ever appointed to the Supreme Court.
The rumored shortlist for Stevens' replacement include Seventh Circuit Judge Diane Wood, who's newly appointed to that bench, a former colleague of Obama, the only nominally Protestant judge on the shortlist. Other two names we're hearing are Jewish judges, Judge Merrick Garland on the Federal Appeals Court in Washington, who's the most conservative, and then Solicitor General Elena Kagan.
And wouldn't it be nice if someone were worrying about whether non-believers are properly represented on the court? Instead, we're hearing in tones of horror that, gee, we can't think about the Protestants and appointing a Protestant because we can't have a religious test for public office. We're suddenly hearing this constitutional principle by Catholics. They're saying that if Obama were to take into account Protestantism, that would be a de facto religious test. But in fact, what we seem to have is a de facto religious test. If you're Catholic, you're in. And I would point out that although Catholics are the largest sector by denomination in the United States, there actually are more Protestants in our nation. And you know, Catholics are 24% of the population, but non-believers and Baptists are tied for second at 15%. Jewish Americans are under 2%. So if we're looking to represent religious views, shouldn't we not only be sure a Protestant stays on the court, but that an openly non-religious judicial nominee gets on our highest court? And of course, we only have 2 women on the court. In Canada, women are more than half of the Supreme Court. The Chief Justice is a woman.
So why shouldn't we question the domination by one religion on the highest court in the land? Why isn't this something that, as Nina Totenberg put it, isn't supposed to be discussed in polite society? That's how we got into this disproportionate situation in the first place.
And also, 5 out of the 6 Catholics are, quote, good Catholics. They're members in good standing. We're not quite sure about Sotomayor. This does give us a majority of justices schooled in religiously segregated institutions who share that commonality.
At stake are these hot-button issues. When does life begin? When does it end? Death with dignity, abortion, abortion funding, stem cell research, cloning for medical purposes, gay rights, marriage equality, the separation between church and state, the prosecution or lack of prosecution of Roman Catholic officials for crimes and cover-up. These are huge issues facing our secular nation.
And we saw the open interference of the Roman Catholic hierarchy, not just in Terri Schiavo, but lately in the debate over health care reform. The church not only tried to eliminate the right to abortion coverage for all women, even in privately held coverage, but they managed to strong-arm the Congress and the president into reiterating and reassuring that they would not, they would continue the cutoff of federal funding for abortion.
We see the Roman Catholic hierarchy not only dictating to their own congregants about what to do in voting for referenda on marriage equality or abortion funding, for instance, but dictating also to Catholic politicians.
So it's a big issue. And Dan, though, let's do a little quick change pace as we go out. What do you have for us?
Well, we play a lot of styles of music on the show, and we have a little bit of something to please everybody. But some of the younger people want to hear a little more contemporary music. There's a group out of South Africa called Architecture of Aggression. These are atheists. And we reported 3 years ago that they did this huge 777 rally against religion. They have a brand new CD out called Acts of God, 4,000 Years of Fallacy. And I won't tell you how they spelled the word fallacy. But here's one of the tunes. It's called The Covenant. And it starts with them playing a little bit of Richard Dawkins. And you won't be able to understand their words. But when they do come in, they are actually quoting Bible verses that support what Dawkins is saying.
The God of the Old Testament has got to be the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it, petty, vindictive, unjust, unforgiving, cyst, an ethnic cleanser urging his people on to acts of genocide.
Oh.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, Dan Barker. That was Architecture of what?
Of Aggression.
Of Aggression. We'll be right back to talk about some famous April Fee thinkers and with Daniel C. Dennett, philosophy professor at Tufts.
My name is Hal. I'm from Berwyn, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
That music is Die Gedanken sind frei, My Thoughts Freely Flower, and we use it as the introduction to Free Thinkers Almanac. There are many big names of freethinkers who were born in the month of April, and they include Thomas Hobbes, whether he was a deist or a covert atheist. Hobbes was anti-clerical, anti-Puritan, and anti-Catholic.
And it's very cool that Christopher Hitchens, author of God Is Not Great, was a very firm believer, unbeliever, of course, and we've had him on Freethought Radio, shares his birthday, not the year, with British freethought activist George Jacob Holyoake and Thomas Jefferson. They were all born April 13th, different centuries, of course.
Thomas Jefferson, in his Notes on Virginia in 1781, wrote, "Millions of innocent men, women, and children since the introduction of Christianity have been burnt, tortured, fined, imprisoned, yet have we not advanced one inch towards uniformity. What has been the effect of coercion? To make one half the world fools, the other half hypocrites, to support roguery and error all over the earth."
And speaking of freethinking U.S. presidents, Ulysses S. Grant was born April 27, 1822, and he advised, "Leave the matter of religion to the family altar, the church, and the private schools, supported entirely by private contributions. Keep the church and state forever separate."
Grant shares his birthday, but not year, with Herbert Spencer, the agnostic philosopher, journalist, and writer, and Edward Gibbon, who was born in 1737, historian of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, who believed that Christianity introduced a new and negative element into religion in damning those who would not accept Christian teachings.
And he also shared his birthday with Mary Wollstonecraft, born April 27, 1759, the mother of the women's movement, who said the being cannot be termed rational or virtuous who obeys any authority but that of reason.
And then Clarence Darrow. He was born on April the 18th in 1857. And one of his quotes is what we have on some bus signs. Clarence Darrow said, "I don't believe in God because I don't believe in Mother Goose."
And the great David Hume was also born in April in the 26th. And then we do want to leave a little time for the song by Thomas Lehrer, who was the songwriter born April 9th, in his honor, his very timely ditty, Vatican Rag.
"First get down on your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect, and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make do whatever steps you want if you have cleared them with the pontiff. Everybody say his own Kyrie eleison, doing the Vatican Rag. Get in line in that processional, step into that small confessional. There the guy who's got religion will tell you if your sin's original. If it is, try playing it safer, drink the wine and chew the wafer. 2, 4, 6, 8, time to transubstantiate. So get down upon your knees, fiddle with your rosaries, bow your head with great respect and genuflect, genuflect, genuflect. Make a cross on your abdomen when in Rome, do like a Roman. Ave Maria, gee, it's good to see you. Getting ecstatic and sort of dramatic and doing the Vatican Rag."
And that was Tom Lehrer performing live, playing the piano and singing on live television, performing his Vatican Rag. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we'll be back in a few minutes to talk with Daniel C. Dennett about preachers who are not believers.
Hi, my name is Amanda from Des Moines, Iowa. I get all my books from FFRF, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, here with Dan Barker.
And we have on the phone with us, he usually teaches at Tufts University, but he's in New Mexico right now, Professor Daniel C. Dennett. He's been on our show a couple of times before, and we're going to talk about a very interesting article that he co-wrote, that came out last month. Daniel C. Dennett is co-director of the Center for Cognitive Studies, University Professor Austin B. Fletcher, Professor of Philosophy at Tufts University, and he's probably best known for his many wonderful books on philosophy, such as Consciousness Explained, Darwin's Dangerous Idea, Freedom Evolves, many other books, including the blockbuster Breaking the Spell, Religion as a Natural Phenomenon. On March 15th, an article that he co-wrote came out called Preachers Who Are Not Believers. So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Daniel.
I'm delighted to be with you again, Dan. Good to talk to you.
Oh, good to talk to you as always. Tell us about this article and why you wrote it and where we can find it.
For a number of years, I suspected that there were, for every preacher like you who walks away and can't live anymore with the idea of preaching what they don't believe, there must be, there probably are 10 or more that don't have the courage or the guts or the circumstances to permit them to do that. I thought it would be wonderful to study them. And I struck up a partnership with Linda LaScola, a wonderful qualitative researcher who actually proposed the idea, and with help from, among others, you and the FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, we located more than that, but we had half a dozen informants. These were people who were preachers that had a congregation. They were active, and they no longer believed what their congregations thought they believed. And they lived with a rather awful discrepancy between what they believed in their hearts and what they found they had to preach to fulfill their duties. So we interviewed them very confidentially. We don't want to blow their cover. We don't want to out them. And published the results, which are mainly profiles of the individuals with lots of quotes from them and then some discussion. So we published them first on the web on the Newsweek Washington Post site called On Faith, which invites comments on religious faith issues. And then after that, almost immediately, it appeared in Evolutionary Psychology online journal. So it's available at Evolutionary Psychology.
Some of these people, it's hard to find them because that's a very small window of time for some of them because they're on the way out. I know you use pseudonyms, right? In fact, I know some of these people, but I don't know their real names either.
Yeah,
but
yeah, we use pseudonyms, and two of them are hanging on by their fingernails.
they want to stay in somehow, and we can talk about that. But some are desperately trying to find a way to get out. And from the article, it looks like for those, it's more of a practical thing. How do they make a living? What are they going to do with their lives?
Well, it is a practical thing, but the more I think about it, I think for many of them, they're actually trapped by their own good intentions and obligations. They think of what this is going to do. It's a cataclysmic leap from the pulpit. And what about their family? What about their kids? What about all the people in the congregation that have had trust in them? And the upset that they're going to cause dissuades them, and they stay in the job and grit their teeth and try to find a way of doing it. I think it's a very particular sort of moral predicament, because you only get in it because you start out trying to do good things, and you make a few compromises along the way because it seems to be the best way to do those good things, and before you know it, you're up to your neck in hypocrisy.
Well, I thought it was very interesting to look at all the comments that this is already getting. I mean, we have some very distinguished people making comments at the Washington Post site where your article's up. I mean, we have Rebecca Goldstein, Richard Dawkins, Bishop Spong, Deepak Chopra, Welton Gaddy. But I thought it was fascinating what Richard Dawkins posted. He said, the singular predicament of these men and women opens yet another window on the uniquely ridiculous nature of religious belief. What other career, apart from that of clergyman, can be so catastrophically ruined by a change of opinion brought about by reading, say, or a conversation? And I think he's right, isn't he?
I think he is. As so often, Richard hit the nail on the head. I can't think of another occupation where if you change your opinion, that's it. You're stuck because you're not allowed to change your opinion. If you're a scientist, you can abandon the theories that made you famous, and people will go right on listening to you, taking your courses and reading your books and articles. It reminds me, this is, I think, an extreme and not at all benign form of something that we probably all know some interesting cases of. You think of a family with a bunch of kids, and they celebrate Christmas, and they have Santa Claus, and they leave out the milk and the cookies. And as the kids get older, you sort of suspect that the older kids no longer believe, but they're now part of the conspiracy, and they maintain the traditions for their younger siblings. And pretty soon you get a bunch of people, they're all grown up, and they're still going through the whole thing, and nobody's admitting that they don't believe. Well, that's sort of fun, and one understands how you keep the tradition alive, and is a sort of unspoken conspiracy. Nobody's ever going to admit that they don't believe. But in the case of these pastors, this is much more serious, and they don't know. Maybe half their congregation suspects that they're really not, they don't believe any of this. Half the congregation may not believe any of it.
It's a God
nobody
conspiracy.
Can break through the wall of silence about this. It's really remarkable.
It's sort of agreed upon. A system of make-believe that everybody agrees upon.
Or a drama that everybody's playing, yeah.
And what's interesting to me as a philosopher is that this is a sort of conspiracy with no conspirators. Nobody set out to create this system. Nobody thought, hey, here's a great idea. Let's set this up so that people get trapped in this. People trap themselves in it. And then there's so many pretty good reasons for not being the one that calls out that, you know, it's like the emperor's new clothes in a way, too. There's a lot of social pressure against acknowledging this. And one of the things that's striking in our study, I think, is that the two pastors from more conservative literal churches, they have the most trouble because they are in denominations where the ground hasn't been softened by years of talk about metaphor and non-literal readings of the Bible, and so they're really stuck.
I noticed that those guys...
It's a cliff that they might fall off.
Those guys also, in your study, seem more likely to want to get out as well.
I think so, yes.
You said the fundamentalists.
The ones in the liberal churches are quite content. They sort of know that many, perhaps most, perhaps nearly all of their parishioners really share their beliefs, and its ceremony now was pretty empty, and they're doing good things. And so it's not the problem for them that it is for the for the pastors in the literal churches, where there's every pretense, at least, that everybody is a firm believer in the literal and inerrant truth of the Bible.
Well, you know, this is my impression of, Episcopalianism. People are into the ceremony, but most Episcopalians are hardly believers. So,
oh yes, it's even a sort of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Episcopalians and Unitarians are the two certainly most liberal, and United Church of Christ is very
United
very
Church
liberal
of Christ is the most liberal, but maybe a little more religious. Huh?
Well, and some Jewish congregations as well.
And Jewish congregations,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. What we're really looking for, because we want to do a second study, and we actually want to do three. We want to expand the first study by finding people in other denominations. We're particularly looking for priests, Catholic priests, who are still in parishes. And we want to see how they cope with this. We know they're out there. We want some more literal conservative denominations, if we can get them. And some others. Anybody whose story is different from the five that we told, we want to know. We want to see how varied the responses are to this problem. Then, once we've done that, we'll be in a position to put together a much larger survey, which will be done by questionnaires, which will be sent out anonymously to hundreds or thousands of clergy.
I'll find some for
you. We can't get any sense of how widespread this phenomenon is until we can actually sample from the population randomly, the population of clergy.
And, you know, Dan has collected the stories of many ministers who have left the fold, and that's a book in the works.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation who've been former clergy.
And we want to bring their insights into this as well, and we're getting quite a lot of response from people who are former clergy, but we'd still also like to talk to those who haven't made the plunge and see why they haven't made the plunge.
Well, let's talk about that on the second part of our interview. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Free Thought Radio will be right back. We're going to finish our conversation with philosopher Daniel C. Dennett about the new paper that he's just co-written about preachers who are not believers. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is August Berkshire, and I'm the president of Minnesota Atheists, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker, and we're speaking with Daniel C. Dennett, the famous philosopher from Tufts, author of the best-selling Breaking the Spell, about a new study that he has co-written called Preachers Who Are Not Believers. You can get it at the Washington Post Newsweek website on faith. Before we go back to Professor Dennett, I wanted to just say that the opening of the study reads this way. It gives an example. John Updike gave us a moving account in his brilliant novel In the Beauty of the Lilies, which begins with the story of Reverend Wilmot, a Lutheran minister whose life is shattered by his decision to renounce the pulpit in the face of his mounting disbelief. That is fiction, and Wilmot's period of concealment is short-lived. What is it like, this study asks, to be a pastor who stays the course in spite of sharing Wilmot's disbelief?
So, Daniel, I also like how the article ends here. You talk about how, you say, we hope by telling these stories of these clergy who are in the pulpit who have lost their faith, we will hope them and others to find more wholehearted ways of doing the good they set out to do. And I know some former clergy who went into the ministry because they wanted to do good, and that's why they left the ministry. So You're not really dissing these people. You're complimenting them for their motives.
Exactly. No. They went into the ministry. They wanted to do good, and this was the best way they could see. And they've done a lot of good, and they probably will continue to do good. But now in order to do that good, they now have to be deeply hypocritical.
Well, yeah.
That doesn't sit well. they really do suffer. I think that the they're actually in their way. They're very eloquent, and the study was, to me, quite moving. And I'm pleased to see that it is moving to most of the people that read it. It's interesting that some of the commentators are just ferocious in reacting. They're not angry at us for doing the study. They seem to be very, very unsympathetic to our informants. But then there's those that do understand, and they realize that these informants are good people who are trapped.
But you know, I have to say that when I read it, there were a couple of those ministers I'm not very sympathetic toward.
We went into it
with their eyes open that they had a lack of belief, and it was easier for them to just keep going. And I kind of am concerned about the
liberal ones,
the
right?
Liberal ones, because I feel that the liberal religions have a lot of responsibility for making religion look good. And, you know, if it's just fundamentalists, they kind of give them enough rope and they hang themselves. But those liberals have some responsibility for making religion look like it's intellectually respectable. So I have mixed feelings.
You're right. I think that the way I often put it, I say there's a sort of a paradox for liberal clergy and their congregations. The more good they do without really any creed to speak of, the more they give religion in general a good name that it, in other quarters, just doesn't deserve.
If you had done your survey a year earlier, there would have been a wonderful guy you could have talked to. He was a minister here in Madison, Wisconsin. He since left the ministry, but he had told his denomination that he no longer believed in God and that he couldn't do this anymore. He couldn't be a hypocrite anymore, and he had to get out. And his denomination asked him if he could stay to the end of the year until they could find a replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Because what were they going to do with that vacuum?
And they liked him, right?
And he stayed to the end of the year, and he said this was the weirdest thing in the world with them knowing. And he was up there preaching, you know, not about God and heaven and hell, but, you know, living your daily life and morality and that kind of stuff, you know. But he's finally out. And I think we can invite him on our show. He still lives here in town. But
I think you should. I read in the paper about a Dutch congregation whose minister announced that he was an atheist. And they said, that's all right with us. You stay on. You're doing a great job.
Well, liberal congregations there.
Well, some of those liberal ministers. I'm sorry.
The range of attitudes here is fascinating. From people who are so threatened by this that they just have to condemn it. And I suspect that a lot of them are the ones who themselves, in their hearts, don't know what they believe or are pretty sure that they share the belief of the preacher whom they're condemning.
I really liked the fundamentalist one, or the more conservative one named Adam, that's his pseudonym, who doesn't believe anymore, and he's anxious. I mean, he's just wanting to find some way in the world. And for him, it's a practical thing, because what do they do? You know, I know from experience that some of them teach philosophy or go into social work, or maybe they sell insurance. Or
Dan, when you left the ministry, you just said about learning computers.
I found a job.
In the 80s.
Yeah, I found a job. And in fact, John Loftus has his own home business now that he runs. But, you know, they're tortured with, what do I do? You know, how I have a lifetime of skills and knowledge, but what use is it?
Yeah. Well, this is a problem. I think that if we could devise a suitable sort of halfway houses and retraining programs and make it easier for not in the sense it's cushy, but just not just utter heartrending misery, to get them out of their current predicament and into a paying job somehow, I think that would be a good thing to do.
Well, and there's the example of someone like Daniel McGuire, who stayed in the Catholic Church but left the priesthood, and is giving the Catholic Church the old one too, by the way. And his brother Patrick was an ex-priest who became an atheist, who joined our group, and he's dead now. But he went into teaching philosophy. So teaching does seem like one field, but it seems like they would have a lot to teach if they would come out by example.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think it would be interesting to organize a curriculum around them, in fact.
Well, maybe that will happen.
That would be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe at Tufts, huh?
We're talking.
Well, we might be able to do something like that. The main thing I want your listeners to know is that if you're a preacher who is in this predicament and you would like to share your story, we can guarantee complete confidentiality. We are protecting our sources to the utmost, and we're not going to let there be any breaches. So if you have a story to tell us, you can get in touch with Linda Lascola at gmail.com or me at Tufts on the website, and everything that we get in the way of communications will be kept completely confidential.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Daniel C. Tufts. I'm Annie Lurie.
Daniel C. Dennett.
Of Tufts, sorry. I'm here with Dan Barker, and you can read that online. You can read their survey online, Preachers Who Are Not Believers, at the Washington Post on Faith site. Thanks again.
Well, thank you, Annie Lurie, and Dan, it's been very good talking with you as always.
And thanks to Brian Tarani, our producer and engineer. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Go to ffrf.org/radio to hear this show again, archived, or to sign up for the podcast.
And ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021 to join the Freedom from Religion Foundation. Get a sample of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio
and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Lurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.